Now I would like to open the floor and give the microphone as quick as possible to someone from the audience. And then finally, after we have some opinions from you, I would like the panelists again invite them to take their seats back so that they can respond. So who can I give the first? Maybe Peter is the facilitator, and I'm going back to my desk.
I guess I just have a question. I'm going to my name is Emily Kovalarczyk, and I study at the University of Denver in the States, and I'm currently studying abroad at Maastricht University. And I guess I'm going to out myself here as an American, so I apologize for any naivety here. But my impression of both of you guys' opinions is that I'm very confused as what it means to be a European versus Dutch and how they overlap in culture and politically and economically. So my question, I guess, is, Mr. Allwood, you, from your perspective, what I got out of it was that as a being Dutch, in a Dutch culture, they are not being as outward as they used to be. Hmm. And then, I apologize for the pronunciation, but shout? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess what I got out of your perspective is that on an international level and on a European level, they are actively working to be outward and trying to help on that level. So I guess just some clarity in, you know, the differences from your guys' perspectives, and if I got it right, or what's...
Yeah, I think from my perspective, perhaps because I was talking about the view as an expat, I'll say particularly living here in The Hague. And I think one of the issues I think we as an expat have, you know, we have to deal with people on the street level. And I think sometimes you can say that it's the people on the street level who are more affected by the economic climate, things which are happening. And what I was interested with that survey, which said expats don't earn big salaries, I would say particularly in The Hague, if you talk about, I would say, the traditional expat, I would say his salary is more than the average Dutch person because they tend to be well-educated people. And the reason they move here as an expat is mainly for their careers, so they tend to be doing quite well, is my view, especially, you know, people who work for the European Patent Office, patent examiners, people who work for the European Space Agency, you know, rocket scientists and that type of thing. They tend to, I would say, have reasonable salaries. And also, as you alluded to, some of them also, because they work for UN-type organisations, they don't actually pay taxes. So I think they're doing quite well. But then that's also a problem, I think, sometimes with the local community. You know, sometimes we're perceived as the people who are doing very well. We pay very little taxes, and especially I think here in The Hague, there's a policy from the gemeente to make this a really attractive city for international organisations. And if you take the belief that with the inburgering, say for instance, everybody should learn to speak Dutch and everybody should understand Dutch culture, we as expats don't play any part in that. And so I think there's a conflict between sometimes some of the local people and the expats. But on a higher level, say in the gemeente, they're glad that the expat community is here, the expat business is here, because you could say the business of, say, a city like The Hague is expats and international organizations. So it's, I understand what you're saying. It's a dual, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the question is. Because you spoke about a difference between the Dutch and the EU. Is that correct?
On a cultural level, the difference between being Dutch and being outward as a Dutch person versus being outward in the European community as a whole. What, you know, on a street level, when you walk past a Muslim and you have a reaction to that, and that's changed over the years versus... That can still be happening instantaneously as a country on a European level, the country's still being outward in their politics versus in their in day-to-day culture. And I guess that's the discrepancy for me.
I think first thing to say is that there are always many changes going on, or sort of permanent basis. And I think this debate that we now have, we probably could have had 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I think you spoke about a tipping point. I think every day we're on a sort of tipping point. Things are changing continuously. And the example you give about the, if you pass a Muslim, well, that's globally, I guess. That's the same in the US, maybe, as it is in other countries. There are certain patterns going on all over the world. There are new issues developing. We have to debate them. We have to talk about them. And it will be very hard to label many of these discussions, even including migration, tolerance towards maybe the Islam, to take Geert Wilders' point, as opening or closing our external orientation. Having said that, on a more general level, now looking at the distinction between the Netherlands and the EU, for me it is just, I see it on a daily basis, the discussions where we are in, although the Dutch think themselves, I read it in the Dutch newspapers, in the Volkskrant, in NRC, in Trouw, in the newspapers, I read that the Netherlands is a pariah country. We are the odd ones out, we only look at ourselves. I just see that that is not true. Bit of it, I mean, I understand it, but generally there's not that. I also see these developments on a more international level, maybe for a more subtle policy debate. Things are changing continuously. How do you label it? Now, the idea that the Netherlands wants to reduce foreign aid as a basically a non-European issue. Well, we can talk about Lady Ashton if you want, but basically that is something, you know, it's our foreign aid abroad. What is changing in society, and not only in the Netherlands, but also in many other countries in the world, is that there's, maybe partly because of the recession, as you alluded to earlier on, is that there is an awareness. What does it all bring? Are there more alternative, better alternatives for development aid and cooperation, like reducing imports? We're still working on that. Micro investments, this is the new trend. Maybe even more effective. So you can take that as a sign, the discussion about development cooperation as a sort of, okay, that's a change in policy, we're probably inward looking, and it's not necessarily a European area. But it's also a debate about changes, about now what is it actually that we try to achieve, and what are effective instruments, how can we use our money best, etc. And I also see those discussions, not just in the Netherlands, I see it in other countries too, the same debates, and not even limited to the EU. So I'm not quite sure whether it is. There's no link between the discussions that we have as the Netherlands in the EU and whether we have them externally. And I also don't think that particularly a Dutch, and I think in a dynamic time frame, there will be other issues continually going up and coming up, like now the development cooperation. But they will always, policies are changing, and every time countries have to find their positions and what's best. I think that's just the discussion that we have. We try to label them and criticize them, but sometimes we have to just run with them and not only see them as something narrow-minded. But
I'll just quickly add to that, because I really like, it's like the personal, the political, but if you look at it from an more overarching view, you could look from a societal perspective, what it is to be a Dutch person, what it means to be a European, how that interrelates. I always like the term this imagined community by Benedict Anderson. This is basically what we are, right? We construct social systems and culture around communities that we don't even know. And I think every person needs to ask this question to himself, where I am in this society and what I think. And I'm always reminded of the truck driver that in the Netherlands that doesn't like the European Union for the Polish people that sit in the truck and drive around, but likes it because it gives him incredible amount of potential and export potential and actually gives him his job. And it's that dichotomy that is coming more and more to the fore when you have an economic downturn. You know, when everything is great, then it's all positive, but now it's also for some degree about making choices. And individuals do that, they do that in their families, and they do that on a political level. Just one small addition, if I may, because I was really struck by the expat statistics. And one thing that I do feel in the Netherlands, very positive about the outward looking, but the social communities in the Netherlands, the Dutch social communities are very closed. I think expats can attest to that. Basically, social networks here formed at university at an early age, and it's very hard to kind of get into it, right? And these communities are quite closed, and it's friends for life, and you're kind of from your university. And by the way, I'm talking quite elitist because I guess I went to college, so that's what I know. But if I can talk from that perspective, then I think that's kind of something that expats have a big problem with. It's not like you really, it's not easy making friends, you know, if I may.
That's true.
I see, that gentleman, yeah? Oh, yeah. Well, ladies first, but you will have a turn.
It's okay.
After.
You actually brought up something I was going to mention about, is it Dutch first and European second? But the issue I've been going through my mind is, once upon a time, globalization was a real buzzword. I wonder if this is a rebound effect of nationalism versus globalization. You know, we're nationals first. I'm talking worldwide. I'm also talking European-wide as far as how the European Union is going. I am an expat, but I've actually only recently arrived here. But I've been an expat mostly in Eastern European countries, particularly ones that went into the EU in 2004. And I'm just wondering if you have any views on this nationalism that seems to be working more. I'll give you one example. I was working in Hungary for nearly 5 years. I was back there recently. I have very strong feelings for the place, and I'm very concerned about the nationalistic fervour that seems to be spawned by a right-wing government. Also, the anti-Semitism that's happening there, the media censorship in one form or another that's happening there. And what does the EU do about the countries that do this? Are there any rules? This is another question entirely, of course, but are there any rules? There's rules for getting into the EU, but are there any rules for kicking them out?
Mm-hmm. Shall we keep it at these questions? Who would like to?
Thank you for that question. I think you touch up on a critical point, and I do think that we need to be careful of what happens next in that sense, because this trend is, again, this trend I was referring to, this long-term trend of more closeness, more focus on crafts and arts, but in the local community, this inward-looking thing, tribalism, this is something that you do see and will continue to go. Whether it doesn't replace globalism, but it changes globalism, and the question is, how do we deal with it? I don't have immediate answers, but it's something that we need to be aware of. When it comes to globalism, this will only become bigger because these communities that you discuss, when it comes to anti-foreign movement, anti-Semitism, these communities are going global. So you don't find your friends only in the national area, but you also create networks all across the globe with the same view. And that's, on the one hand, in this super connected world, the benefit, because you can find everybody, but you can also get lost in your own little world, it's all of a sudden it turns out that there are many people that think exactly like you, and you don't have to discuss with anybody else, right? There is no need to go beyond the borders if you are connected to exactly like-minded people, and that's when there is a risk of losing that connectedness with different ideas, with different views, where panels like this, even if we would, you know, be more distanced from each other, could not happen because we simply wouldn't find each other. And that's the dark side of globalization, even, I would say. And it's about finding the right balance there. And I think you raise a very good question, but maybe you can answer it.
Me?
Sorry.
Is this an invitation to disagree?
No, I think it's an excellent point. Sorry.
I suppose one of the interesting things you were saying about nationalism, one of the things I find, especially about living in The Hague, and I think it's probably similar with all the big cities in the Netherlands, that over 50% of the people are non-Dutch. And I think one of the issues, and I think it's not to lay the blame, but I don't think we're actually represented enough in what goes on in these cities. And that's also part of our problem. We have to be active citizens. And I think, especially for, I'd say, the expat communities, a slight problem is they believe themselves to be transient. So they don't get involved in local politics. Often then their children are not involved with local children. Why? Because they tend to go to an international school. They tend to be in locations, they tend to live in areas where they have a lot of international people. And I think that can create an us and them type culture. And also, I think, you know, one of the things which, you know, when I said to people, perhaps if you go, for instance, like in The Hague, for instance, there's 50% ethnic minorities or 50% non-Dutch. If you go to the gemeentehuis and you look in the city council, I think there's 46 councillors. And if you just do, say, like a colour count or something like that, you find that sort of the 50% of us who live here are not represented in the city council. And I think that also is something which has to change. You know, I mean, it's going to take time, but I think that's also one way of getting everybody represented in the right ways. Because also I think one of the issues, I think, with, if you look probably historically with Dutch society, there's been this polarization. You know what I mean by polarization? The structuring within the Dutch society where certain groups share with others. And the fact is, I think the new groups have come in the last, say, 20, 30 years are not a part of this because these sort of rules, these unwritten rules, were well established before we arrived. And so we have to somehow find our way into the powers, into where the representation, and where we then also have, I would say, a bigger influence in what's going on, especially, I think, in the big three cities in the Netherlands.
Arjan, if you would like to add to that.
This point that you bring up about representation, I know from the academic literature best, but then from the UK. So it's not a... It's these are patterns that you see everywhere else. Just on a side note, two things, because Billy and Gideon have said, I think, most already, but... The first thing is Hungary. I think what Hungary may show is that we see now with the euro crisis in all the other countries, patterns are so hard to change. There are traditions in countries related to democracy, related to representation, values. They're very hard to change. And one of the patterns that we have in the Netherlands, I think, is that we are pragmatic and, I guess, in a way, open-minded. So I'm not so sure whether we can easily compare trends in societies between the Netherlands and Hungary and other countries. Just something I would like to add is that I have seen about the Netherlands a lot of discussion about that the left flank and the right flank are coming up so strong, so powerful. It's all over the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, the Dutch newspapers, is that our extremist flanks become, and what are they? Closed. They are sort of, it's the PVV, it's the SP and all the rest. To a large extent, this is just bad luck for the Netherlands because we had the middle parties in dreadful leaderships. States. So who would ever vote for a middle party, traditionally one of the bigger parties, where there is no appealing leader? You know, even the Christian Democrats, which they would traditionally really vote for their party. So the impression that people have of our flanks, of our more extreme parties, the impression they've created all around the world, more or less, is just bad luck. And now we see Diederik Samson from the Labour Party doing very well, and he's gaining back these votes very quickly. And at least one of those pillars, on the more extreme, as it's regarded externally as the extreme, is going down, and we become all of a sudden so much more of this sort of societal medium country. So maybe on a positive note.
Depends on the leadership then, which can be rather, you know, volatile.
Yeah, but that's good for the Dutch society, actually.
Yeah.
The Germans have a much different party system, in the sense that it's much more difficult in Germany to start a new party. So they keep being stuck with the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats, whereas we, you know, Pim Fortuyn can come in and, you know, boom, it goes up, but it dies out very quickly. And we have a very flexible system which can deal with the societal emotions and the ebb away.
We have 2-year election cycles. I mean, it's
quicker than Italy and Belgium, actually, last decade. I've seen other people who'd like to have, I think the gentleman there was the first, and then maybe Lucy, yeah?
My name is Burger, and I lived in also an expat, but close by in Brussels for 35 years. And since, a little less than 2 years, I'm now back. And I would like to come back to, let me say, the image of the expat which you have of the Netherlands and the problems. And I can tell you that all these problems you were mentioning about not being close connected to the Belgians in my case, or having problems there and so on, they're all exactly the same there as they are here. The only difference, I think, and that I'd like to have the opinion of the panel here, is the image of Holland. If you say as a, let me say, a foreigner, not being Belgian or Dutch, I'm going to work, I've got a job in Brussels, working for the European institutions or whatsoever, then everybody says, oh, nice, Brussels, nice place, you can eat very well there, and so on. If you talk to Mr. Allwood there, say, I've got a job in London, oh, fantastic, particularly after the Olympic Games and so on. Or if you say, I go to Paris, yes, I mean, that's something. If you say, oh, I'm being posted in The Hague, my God, what are you going to do in The Hague? Terrible place there. I mean, that is the image, and I would like to have your opinion on that, because I think that being 31 at the 31st place on the grading is partly a problem of that also.
Yeah, about the... Sorry. I understand, because I've been here 18 years, and fortunately for me, I think The Hague is... really improved as an attractive city for expats, and also I think as I say, an attractive city for the residents. You know, when I came here 18 years ago, I was working for a Brazilian mining company, so often we had to talk to them late on the phone, so I'd be leaving the office about 7 o'clock. And at that time, you know, it seems strange now when you talk to younger people, at 7 o'clock, if you wanted just say a loaf of bread or some milk, the only place you could go was the gas stations, the petrol stations. And I lived in one of the nicer neighborhoods, I suppose, of The Hague, the Statenkwartier. And I remember, must have been, I don't know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when the first Avondwinkel opened. There was a big discussion, about an Avondwinkel. And when I first came to The Hague, I think once a month there was late night shopping on a Thursday or something like that. And now it's completely changed, and I think it's two things. I think one is maybe pressure from the expats, but also I think the local Dutch people have embraced it. So so I think that's what's happened, I would say, in The Hague. But also I think your point is, if you say to an expat you're being relocated to Paris, I think the difference, I think you tend to think, I'm going to Paris, first I have to learn to speak French. That would be a must, I think. And also, you tend to feel, I'm going to embrace French culture. You may not know what it is, but you would have an idea that I'm going to become French. I think the problem is with I think Holland in general, you know, you say, I'm going to Holland. You know, I mean, I think most people, if they go to Amsterdam, it's open, it's liberal. But apart from that, Dutch culture, you know, there is a Dutch culture, but people don't really know what it is, and it's not something which you'd want to embrace, say, as French culture or Italian culture. You know, Dutch, and I think that's probably because Dutch are very open-minded, very liberal, and, you know, you come, you can do what you want. You know, in the beginning, when I heard, you don't have to speak English, you don't have to speak Dutch, we speak English. The Dutch would say, our language is very difficult, so we'll speak to you in English. You know, and an Englishman, you go to France, and you say, will you speak English? You know, it's, yeah. And, you know, and I give people the example of, you know, I go to quite a few receptions of embassies. And you'll say, have the ambassador, say, of Brazil or whatever, and there'll be other ambassadors there, be people from municipality, people from foreign affairs, and the guy will start talking in English. And everybody will think it's normal. You know, you can imagine that happening in Paris.
Question, or do we take another question?
Well, just very briefly, I think on the one hand, when in Rome, do as the Romans. You know, that's part of the thing you have to do. You have to adapt.
No, is that a dangerous one?
Oh, you know, we wanted a panel, so maybe. We
So when you're Finland, you have to go to saunas.
No.
Oh, yes.
Well, actually. Actually, that's a funny comment because in Finland, it is, if you work for a Finnish company, and I have, and you're in Finland, you will have to go to sauna. I mean, there's no way about it. And actually, I think it's also very non-gender sensitive because women and men sip separately, and it creates all kinds of societal problems that the Finns are now talking about because, you know, business deals are also done there. Just to give you an example about a very local practice that impacts society and the way you do business. And Americans don't like to go into sauna with
no, that's why I said
you know,
that.
So so, but there is this. On the other hand, it says something about the Dutch being very adaptable, because I guess we'll do that kind of thing if it brings in business. But to your point, let's not compare apples with pears. It's much cooler in a way when you say it's in perception, huh? I really love living in The Hague, but you know, if you go to New York, if you go to London, and then you compare that to The Hague is nowhere near that kind of level of a capital, and it has purely to do with amounts of people. Even Amsterdam is amazing how it's branded. It's a huge brand. It's worldwide. Everybody knows Amsterdam, but it's 900,000, maybe 1 million people living there. We're talking London is 10 million people. Paris also that amount. So that's, you know, so. That makes it also very interesting and attractive to be here for certain types of people. So.
A final point then, and then we would like to give someone else the floor for a question.
I just want to say that I really like the question. I've worked for many, many years in the European environment, and there are good things and there are bad things to say. Once I was on a purely scientific panel, and there were Dutch people in the audience, and we tend to be outspoken. And with the microphone open, my British neighbour bowed over to me, and the microphone was open, and he said, "God, I hate. Did you hear this?
Yes. Yeah.
God, I hate the Dutch." And you know, this is the impression that I've heard very often. The Dutch are rude, blunt. You know, our minister is actually. So I would actually almost be very tempted to, you know, if you raise this question, why do you raise this question? What is it that you would have liked to hear or like to say about our reputation? Because it may be.
But it's worked out pretty well for us at the same time.
Well, let's ask the audience. I mean, are we experiencing a common frustration here that the Dutch are blunt and rude? You wouldn't think so if you see us here as panelists. But what is your impression? Yeah.
Shall I say it?
If you can address this question.
Well, just not only this question, but if I may allow to say something else. Yeah. My name is Khalid Chaudhry. At the moment, I'm a candidate for the second chamber, Tweede Kamer, Partij van de Toekomst, party of for the future of the future. I fully agree with you that Netherlands have been changed, since last few decades, one or two decades, especially since the September 11. And the reason is it's not economic recession, but something else. And that was our foreign policy. What you just mentioned, that perhaps we'll have to change our policy. And I would definitely suggest that Netherlands needs to change foreign policy, not to follow blindly United States of America. Last week, Bishop Desmond Tutu, he demanded the arrest and trial of George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Tony Blair, because they have destroyed, the global values and many, many things. So if we are talking about Netherlands, definitely, yes, there have been lot of problems, because of Wilders in the Middle East. There have been many issues, discussions, and debates when Dutch investors or Dutch are the Middle Eastern investors wanted to come over to The Hague to invest something. There have been extremely, there have been many, many reservations because of Mr. Wilders' policies, certainly. Yeah, then you were talking about Mr. Rutte. Mr. Rutte.
Can you put it in a question?
Okay. Let me put into a question. Wouldn't it be the best solution for the Netherlands as a very, very small country on the globe to that the leadership starts thinking about global values and under the global values adopt policy matters and policies, whatever the policies are, whether they are social, political policies or economical policies. Thank you.
This is about outward-looking orientation. Who would like to take this question?
Yeah, I think for me, from a person who thinks, I'm born in the UK, my parents are Jamaican. One of the things I like about living in the Netherlands, because I'm living on continental Europe, is I feel more European than living in the UK. And I think because of that, I think that sort of, in a way, globalization, we all live on this earth together. And I think what you are right, what happened after 9/11, there's a sort of been, I would say, a fear of Islam, Muslim, whatever. And I think not just Netherlands, but Europe has to sort of find a way to be at ease with it, because I think that sort of... if you look back over history, there's always been religious conflict. The British Church, or the British Church was formed out of conflict of religion, and so it's not going to go away. And I think we can't just close our borders and say it's not going to be there. And also there is a bit of an issue, you could say. I hope there's not too many oil people here, but some of the regions where you have Islam country is also oil. So there's also an economic, social, and that all is in the mix. And I think, I'd say responsible governments have to find a way of sorting that out.
Mm-hmm. I think you said very many wise words. But on the thing of the global values, I do see the Dutch government working on global values, actually. The Dutch is a very active supporter when it comes to rule of law. And rule of law is an international value. And there's just here in the Peace Palace, the Dutch invested in a two-day, very massive get together with all kinds of lawyers and politicians from all over the globe, really to put this on the agenda, rule of law. And also in the EU, you can clearly see that the Dutch are doing something about rule of law, and they're sticking out their necks, and they even veto decisions.
So let me interrupt you, please. Do you think supporting Iraq war and supporting Afghanistan war is for the rule of law? While everybody knows the realities about the Iraq war, everybody knows about the Afghanistan war on terror,
It is exactly for the minerals, for the natural resources of Afghanistan and some other areas. What kind of rule of law we are talking about?
Well, I'm perfectly happy to talk about that. I think it's generally been regarded as a mistake, even by George Bush, by Tony Blair. And if you want my personal opinion, that was a rushed decision here. It was a very narrow decision, mm-hmm. too. But you spoke generally about global values, and I respond to the general value of global values, and I think it fits in our tradition, this about the rule of law. I think as a general global value, we are a defender in international fora of deregulation and liberalization. We are a defender of human rights. We are also a defender of environmental developments and protection, less than 5 years ago, but that has to do, I think, with the crisis. It is by far from the Dutch international agenda, from different ministries here. So I do think that there are international values that the Dutch are very active in. It also comes back to my point that I said we may be underinvested investing in it, for example, when it comes to international monitoring of banks. We do know there's a problem. The Dutch are very much behind all kinds of strengthening of the rules for international banking. We're very active in that area. In fact, we're one of the countries pushing it I think I can safely say that. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to the rule of law. This is a very important development about the international values. There's for the Netherlands, there's an awful lot at stake here, because China is playing by different rules compared to what the EU wants to do. And the US is playing by different rules. And there's quite a conflict in many areas between the EU, the Netherlands, and the US when it comes to liberalization, agricultural policy, etc. The Chinese have a very state-oriented international perspective. Now, for the EU, and specifically for the Netherlands, we thrive best in a deregulated, liberal international trading area. That's what we've always been good at. It's the Chinese are now playing by different rules, and they may actually be better. And that poses very serious questions to what are the global values that we can work with? Because there's a conflict of global values going on at the moment under the heading of multipolar world. Where do we fit in? What are the values that we need to have? We're still on the values of liberalization, human rights, environmental protection, rule of law. That's what we still are. But are those really the values that are now the kind of values that you need to have to survive in this multipolar world? Mm. So I do see this debate happening. I do see the Dutch involved in it. I see the EU involved in it. I wouldn't... if you want, I will classify the support for Iraq as a failure. I can easily do that because I never understood what we were going to do there. We can talk about global values of democracy, but we also knew at the time that democracy is not the same in different kinds of countries. So we all saw these difficulties. But that mistake, as big as it was, that doesn't mean that I think the Netherlands is not thinking about global values. And we do have problems with that because we're lost a little bit in the values that we have. I will again defend the Dutch here because I think this is a very difficult debate where I cannot tell you what the best global values are these days. Mm. I like liberalism and free trade and human rights protection, but I also know that if that is not the international world that we're dealing in, that we may have to reconsider them, and then I'm personally getting a little bit lost in, okay, what are our global values that we have to stick by? Mm-hmm. I'm still sticking to liberalism, by the way. Yeah. But is what the Netherlands is talking about.
Thank you, Anya, for the geopolitical view on values and interesting response to the question. I hope,
the question has been addressed to an extent. I would like to give some other people, before we close the debate, the possibility. I see someone, let's say, from the younger part of the audience, and then I would like to move to you. So maybe, can you?
Yeah, I'm a bit puzzled by something Mr. Alwood said. Just to quote you, I'm sorry. Something like, it's a pity that the Dutch gave up the fight to make their neighbors more liberal. And that was in your point of open-mindedness. But doesn't open-mindedness prompt that you accept views from your neighbors that are less liberal?
I suppose yes, in one way. But I think as you're asking my opinion over the, I was trying to say something, what for me was, you know, from a generation where, yeah, we can have this discussion about drug laws, and I mean, people can have their views for and against, but if you're for more liberalisation of drug laws, and, you know, and it's again with experience, you know, for like my parents are Jamaican, so I know what happens in Jamaica with the marijuana growth, you know, I mean, it's a sort of industry there, but it's a, yeah, it's criminality involved, and you tend to feel, will it ever go away? You know, it's just a bit like with prohibition in America. You know, they, you know, it never went away. And some people said that, you know, the big financial growth of the mafia was during prohibition. Yeah, and so my view is that Netherlands had this position where I'd say in Holland it seemed to be working sort of okay. There's always going to be problems, and the other countries around were complaining. You know, so now you see, you know, in Maastricht they have some problems, and yeah, and this, in some respect, as real liberal, you probably would have hoped that Holland would have, well, the Netherlands would have fought harder, that Europe got more progressive in their drugs policy. Not because I'm a great drug user, but I think that sort of, I think it's more to do with, it's always going to be there. You know, if you look at what's happening in Mexico, and you know, I mean, yeah, you're not going to get rid of it. So just to sort of put your head in the sand and say it's going to go away if we legalize it, I don't think it's going to happen. If that answers your question.
you can evade reality, but you cannot evade the consequences of evading reality.
That's one to think about. here in the front, yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Hilke Melchers. In my daily practice, we make programs for diplomats to understand the Netherlands better. So what I'm going to say has a lot to do with what I'm doing, actually. There's a couple of things that I think are maybe interesting to point down. First of all, there is a concern in the Netherlands that we are turning too much inside. The reason for that, I think, is that we are just confused because the world is changing quite a lot. Traditional values don't necessarily apply anymore, and new answers need to be found. They haven't been found. We are trying to get to understand where we are. In the meantime, there's new technology introduced in society. People are unfamiliar with what it means in ethical terms. We still have to define a lot of things. World is spinning around a little bit, and I think we are somewhat uncomfortable with that. That's my first comment. The second comment is on Afghanistan. It's a very painful situation from the point of view, okay, the Americans have a basic different reaction from their background to the world than anybody else. So the particular reaction that the United States had, whether 9/11 was actually self-involved or was from an outside source, is then becoming irrelevant. But the reaction is typically American, and it has to do with the Wild West, and they just do this action because that's how the United States works. Now, as for the Dutch position, we are trying to be loyal people. So Mr. de Hoop Scheffer, Secretary General, we were linked in NATO. We found, you know, we had to do something. Secondly, he was looking for a new position because NATO's original position was actually not worthwhile anymore for keeping, so he's looking for a new target, reason why he did it. Was it legal? If you look from international standards, it was completely illegal, just power play. So that we accept. as a matter of fact, and whether everybody's going to be happy with it is a different question. Now, the third thing that maybe is interesting here is, in the future, what can the Dutch do? It was said already that the Dutch are pragmatic. Whatever they say, in the end, is not counting, apart from the pragmatism that we apply. And there is ethics in pragmatism. It's not that pragmatism means, you know, I can do left or right, whatever my, you know, whatever my mood dictates me. There is an ethics about pragmatism, and we are very good at it. And I think for many foreigners, it's very hard to understand how this actually operates, because we send out messages on principles, and then we start acting on practice. That's my contribution. Thank you.
Okay, Gideon.
I think you're absolutely right when it comes to the global values, and we talked about that already a little bit, that's kind of something we have to deal with, and that's changing. And I think the Dutch are very adaptable and are finding new ways, and we're kind of in that shift as we speak. To speak about the foreign policy, and that, I mean, that's an interesting one, because that's really an outward looking, if you're talking about outward looking, foreign policy and defense are the two most outward looking parts of the government. Although that also is changing, right? Because municipalities talk with it. So all these are part of the shifts that you were referring to earlier. But if you look at the response of the Netherlands, apart from being pragmatic in its policy, it's also been very innovative in the way we've implemented and have been thought leaders when it comes, for instance, to post-conflict reconstruction. The Dutch approach is world-renowned, and we've worked very closely together with the British and many other countries to implement that type of approach, which, you know, with all its negativities and things you can say about, the point is that we will, you see that the Dutch have been engaged on the geopolitical skill, and for a large part, I do believe, and that's, you know, the Peace Palace is here for a reason, because there is this belief in society that we do want to do good. And I think this duality, I mean, I really like this term of doing good and doing well. The Dutch have always, you know, I like to think, I'm not sure it's always true, but I'd like to think that would be, if you look at the broader sense of what we're trying to do, that would be the thing, or at least that would be my mission or my vision for what I would like the Dutch to be. Mm-hmm. And I hope many people agree. That said, it doesn't mean there are no mistakes. It doesn't mean that there are no bad choices. It doesn't mean that we all have to agree. I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of government spokesperson, because the Dutch have made mistakes and they will continue to do so. But overall, I think the how do you say it? The number under the line is kind of okay.
The 3D example,
yeah,
that we're trying to bring in Afghanistan with development.
Exactly.
And not aggressive and defend and
that is including the military.
It is, but it was also, I mean, I just, if you bringing back the point of doing good and doing well, there was a clear element of doing good involved, but it was also an essence of doing well, because, okay, we wanted to be visible, we wanted to, you know, take a stake, and we thought it would lead us to, you know, important international positions. You know, we were thinking about our own pragmatic interests, but we were also trying to do the right thing, at least.
And to add to that,
it may have been a mistake, but
my worry is that we're gonna. That's why I said that the change in government might change that, because I really believe that not investing in defense, not investing in those foreign relations, will take away that. And we had fantastic people at very high positions in the World Bank, in the UN, over the last years, and you don't see them anymore. I mean, that's my worry. You know, Wijfels, Ritse, and all those people from the. I forgot the names, but Melkert, indeed, and De Hoop Scheffer.
Yeah, I've heard this argument many times, and I see the value of it, but I also see that at the sub-level, below the high ranks, the Dutch are very active still in engaging and sending out civil servants and having ambassadors and in international organizations. So we're still very active players, although we do not have those key positions. I always find this discussion in the Netherlands about, we may not have the key position. It just misses the... Of course, it would be nice, but it somehow misses the point that we're so much more strongly involved at many layers and mm-hmm. with the debates. And, you know, this is where I do think that the Dutch can also make better contributions by investing more in studies and workshops and all the rest of it. But we do a lot of that.
But if we don't have
it, it should have been only 2Ds, not the 3D, because involving guns and bullets, you can never, ever produce a peaceful reserve.
No, but we were trying. I agree. But we.
Gentlemen, wait. I've seen two people who would like to bring up a point. And before we close this debate, I would like to give them the possibility. So go ahead there. And then I think, Lucy, you wanted to have something on the agenda. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Steven. I am Dutch, but I'm here because of several reasons. I work for a European organization based here in The Hague, so I work a lot with expat communities. We have a lot of trainees, for example, from abroad. Also, my girlfriend, she's from Colombia. We're now trying to had to have her migrate here to the Netherlands in a legal way. And at the same time, I have a colleague who is also becoming an expat. And it's very noticeable what the difference is between somebody who is a knowledge migrant, where the procedures are really easy, and somebody who's coming, like, not with a job and has to learn Dutch already before even entering the country to a certain level. Mm-hmm. So I'm really concerned by that. I do think we are outward looking. I don't think we're fairly tolerant. I mean, if you look at the media, there's a lot of news about what's going on. I mean, Merkel, she's very often in the news. We are very aware, internationally aware, of what's going on. We have one of the best internet connections of the world. And in terms of businesses, yes, it's very attractive to sort of settle in the Netherlands. We make it very attractive economically. But on a human level, we see that there's really a sort of paradigm shift. And it's very worrying. And it started indeed after 11 September and the events happening in America. And it's really a European trend, or even a Western trend, that you see that more inward looking, or at least a lesser degree of solidarity. And I think it started with the media, really. And now the worrying thing is that by repeating this message all over and over again, in the beginning, the Netherlands was shocked about the things that was said by right-wing politicians. And then this message was repeated over and over and over again, so that people started to believe in it. And still you can see that was also about the data, that in terms of perception, the Dutch are really... there's a difference with the policy and popular opinion. I just think that people have not been able to fight for that. I mean, the inburgeringstest was introduced by Rita Verdonk, and we know how she left Dutch politics. Like, totally disagreed. Nobody took her seriously. The policies that she introduced are still there. So I think how I also heard all your arguments, and I think we are really practical, and perhaps we are very blunt as Dutch, and we don't care so much about our image. But I do think we have to be realistic, and at the moment our image is very hurtful, and it's also hurtful in a way that it's against our self-interest. I mean, we advocate that we are in favor of democracy and all these things. But in reality, we also have to make that work. We have to have a very critical press. Well, it's not really happening in the Netherlands. So my question now is, how can we sort of change this cycle? And how can we make people in the Netherlands care more about our image and really be more welcoming to the expat, but not only the expat community, I would say migrants in general.
So. owner and the inventor of a platform, what would your response to this for expats? What would your response be on this question?
I think with a lot of response, it has to be, it's like a two-way street. I think one is that sort of, perhaps it's been too easy for expats, but I think there's got to be a way where more coming together of, I'd say, not just expats, but I think it's all migrants. And with what is, I think the gentleman there was saying about the Dutch are getting confused, I also think it's a problem that the nature of Dutch is changing. You know, in the big cities, you know, what is a Dutch person? Is it white, blonde, 6 foot tall, or is it a sort of a Moroccan woman wearing a hoofdoek? You know, I mean, they're all Dutch. And I think that sort of often when the opinions are about the Dutch, you could say in one level, it's the traditional, can be termed the traditional, if that's such a word, the Dutch people are getting confused because in a way their world is changing. You know, in the big cities, you're now living in a multicultural environment, and that is a big change for some people. You know, there are some people who do get a bit concerned. If a mosque is going to move into my neighbourhood, now, if you're used to living in multicultural environments, a mosque is a mosque. You know, a synagogue may come, a mosque may come, who cares? But for some people, if you've been brought up in a certain way, that can be very threatening. And it's, you know, and there's, you know, I mean, in the city of The Hague, and there are people doing programs where, you know, people come together. It could be through sport, through other things, where they just meet each other. You know, you know, they don't have to know whether I'm a Muslim, whether I'm a Jew, whether I'm something else, that people come together and people just meet. And often they find that there's not so great differences between people. And I think that's where I think in Netherlands, where there's still this like separation. You know, we're in different groups and we're looking. You know, I mean, am I looking after you? And I think that's has to change. And I think, you know, I think there's got to be some way embracing. And I think for the Netherlands, multiculturalism. I think, and also if we embrace this, we also embrace. I think a bit like where I see you have a chance, especially in The Hague, you have so many international people who, in general, actually quite like living here. But you know, are they Dutch? Are they, you know, are they? You know, I have a son who was born here. Yeah? He has a British passport. He's never lived in the UK. And when he's 18, he has to choose between having a British and a Dutch passport. Why? You know, I mean, is he British or is he Dutch? You know, why does he have to choose? Yeah? And I think that's, you know, so in a way to take nationality out of it, does it have to be that important? Is my view. You know, I think especially somewhere like The Hague has an opportunity really to be a sort of a showcase or a test case as a truly international city. I'm not saying it's easy, but that's why I said, you know, you have to start with a dream, with a plan. Yeah, but I think there is a possibility here because it is very international. But anyway, that's just my personal. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
One small remark. I agree that, for example, Rotterdam and Amsterdam is a different case. Even Utrecht would be a different case. I would set The Hague quite apart. In the sense that for the Dutch, The Hague is not a town. The Hague is a place, and basically it's very calm, and the bourgeois rules the place. Mm. I mean, and they stratified. Mm. And their stratification doesn't include foreigners apart from saying, hello, how do you do?
Yeah.
That's very simple.
Yeah.
And if they have to change, The Hague is not a good place to say so. I mean, Amsterdam would be a better place, Rotterdam would be a better place, even Utrecht would be a better place. The Hague would possibly be the last one to do so. I'm sorry to say so. It's not that we're unfriendly to foreigners, but that's the way it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I give the microphone to an expat who actually lives in The Hague? Lucy, behind.
It's... partly common, there might be a question at the end of it, but probably won't. It's just something that I keep hearing a lot, and I think Adrian kind of mentioned it. It was, I think, sort of the underlying threat in your argument, and I think Gideon alluded to it a little bit more. That's, you know, sometimes this sort of inward turn is, you know, this sort of these trends are actually a sign of pragmatism, and the Dutch are practical. We know what we're doing. We know exactly what we're doing, and this is, you know, there are a host of reasons. And I always worry because I hear these arguments a lot from the Dutch. and that this can turn to be a little bit of a slippery slope, ultimately, because pragmatism can turn into, you know, you can then sort of self-justify quite a lot. And I think that, especially in the sort of economically tough times, the sort of, you know, the pragmatism argument has been made historically in these strained societies a lot. And so, you know, this is sort of a tendency that I see, that there's a lot of sort of, you know, very often it's very justified, and I understand, but when do we sort of, when do you know that pragmatism is justified argument or sort of excuse, and where do you draw the line? How the society discusses it, you know, is it raised by anyone? Is there sort of a need to, or do you sort of, because you're Dutch, you know?
Yeah. Adrian, and then after you, Gideon. Yeah.
Oh,
now, Adrian, go ahead. It's your turn.
That's why we have debates so often. You see, there is no answer to it. We just debate. We are not just. I understand what you say, and I wish that was the end of the discussion, because, you know, you said, as an expert, you commented on our society. We have to listen to that, respect it, and not say. We go home and we reflect on it for 2 weeks. But you also said on the way, and then I thought, no, it's not enough that you say this, because you said that we don't interact in a way. Yeah? We respect each other's privacies, more or less.
That's a generalization, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you said. And I agree, but I also want to say that it has something from the good side, too. It is not just a negative. It's also the part of the tolerance, and I see the irritation of it. That to the pragmatism, which in this case is, of course, also the pragmatism, we also debate a lot. It's not really only true that we leave each other in peace, but we also debate a lot. And through that, and we debate probably more violently than in other countries, partly because, as I just said, our political party system is so flexible. We get that actually out in parliament. Look at Germany. They don't have it. There's a sort of repressed debate on you know, I won't mention it, but... Well, the EU, let me mention it. It is not out in Parliament as it is here. And that it's not that there is we know when pragmatism is good or bad. We take decisions. We go to Iraq, wrong. You know, we just, you know, we admit it. And, you know, we pay for it, because then, of course, we still have to go extra years to Afghanistan or whatever. But, you know, we debate a lot. That is what we do. I think there are few taboos in our debates. We debate on everything. Now, look at the elections. I think this is very important here. We are actually very tolerant to the EU. We thought the elections would be against Europe. Well, they weren't against Europe, except for Geert Wilders, even SP. All the other parties are in favor of European integration. We just decided it's much better to go on with the euro and to go on with Europe and just accept it and you know, talk about our own cutbacks in the Netherlands. So it's not, the question is not when do we know that pragmatism is enough or going in the wrong direction. We debate a lot and just we decide, and then the next problem comes up and we'll debate a lot and we'll decide, and some decisions are wrong, some are right. I was really happy with the debates on the elections that we have now, because there's clarity on our pragmatisms to with European integration. There's actually solidarity in that. You know, who would have thought 2 weeks ago? So that's, you know, I like these Dutch when they talk about Europe.
If they do that, yeah. Gideon?
I think pragmatism historically has just served the Dutch well. The question is, do we need to change now, or do we stick to something that's worked so well in the past, whether it was fighting water together, a necessity to work together and to cooperate, or in the 80s when another crisis hit us? You know, this whole idea of talking the people, the workers, the businesses and the governments, put them together and have them come to an accord, that worked out really well. And now the question is, do we need to have some such pragmatic approach again, something that some will coin the polar 2.0, to mention kind of a hip way of putting it. I liked your question about the image. This is just one of the ideas. I've had debates about. I actually wonder what you think about this, because the Dutch came from a stratified society, different pillars of belief and everything was arranged on the top, and all that has fallen away. We have a change in values and all that. And it seems that The Hague is actually, I don't have the figures, but I would say that it is the most segregated, one of the most segregated places in the Netherlands. I moved from Amsterdam to The Hague, and the difference was stunning. I mean, really. And I think there is a general question of what is this closeness in society with neighbors, with neighborhoods, with communities, but also on a European level. One of my suggestions would be, why don't we reinstate the service, not military maybe, but some kind of social service as a solution for that, because maybe that's some way of getting society active again on a more communal level, right? Like you get a lot of benefits as a student, for example, so maybe students can give something back while giving something for education. An idea out there for a politician to think about. Some students over there maybe saying, no way, I'm not doing this, you know? So I think that would be an interesting thing on tolerance and pragmatism. I think in the end it's both, and one leads to the other. It's not so much tolerance in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. It's more pragmatism that leads to tolerance. But does it matter? Is that a negative thing? I don't think so. But
yeah, I would like to close the debate by giving, maybe you would like to reply to this idea of Gideon, a young director of the Center of Innovation, and one of these innovations that he suggests, which is actually what innovation is. It is often recycling existing ideas in different forms, which is not a critique, because I actually support the idea. What do you think about this to revitalize the, let's say, the younger part, so the future, the party of the future is here, of the Netherlands, to have a social service? Is that a good idea that would help alleviate the problem? You don't need to give a very long reply, but just your thoughts
British,
about
we've,
it.
We abolished national service, I think, just before the year I was born, I think. So I think something like that could help, because it's a practical way. But one of the things which, because what I like, I think sport is a way, I think, to do it. I think one of the things which I've always found strange here in Netherlands is that you don't have, sport isn't big at schools. And also, one of the issues, as an expat, what I found as a problem is that sort of, you know, if you've got a child, you say, which club are you going to join them in? Yeah, and the ballotage committees for clubs. So it wasn't over whether my daughter, my son, was a good footballer, but it's whether me as a parent was a suitable person to join that club. And what I find, so for me, I find that sports here, instead of bringing people together, can be very divisive, because I'm sure if people live here, hey, if you say you play for a certain club, they know what type of person you are and what type of income you are. And whereas in the UK, it tends to, people from different classes, different neighbourhoods, play in the same team. And I think that's one way of bringing people together. So that's one way I would think you could do it, through sport. Making, you know, I'd say, getting rid of, I would say, the snobbiness about being a member of the club, but just having teams based on the quality of the players. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would like to thank the three speakers and the audience for raising points, asking questions, having a good conversation, an exchange of experiences, ideas, even proposals on the table for revitalizing our young Dutch society. Thanking the speakers, I would like to give them a little present, which is in the corner, so I'm going to get it.
And the nice thing about this present is that it is inward looking, because you can actually see what is in it. But it's the content itself is then outward looking again, at least it's meant to stimulate it. One is one of our Montesquieu... after Montesquieu Rake's special about the inheritance in Dutch, the erfenis, it's in Dutch, so that's another inburgeringscursus asset of Pim Fortuyn, the erfenis of Pim Fortuyn and what we do with it. And on the other side, which is still transparent, you can see an interesting wine, which is produced on an estate that once was owned by the family of Montesquieu. So it's a Bordeaux wine from a wine estate originally owned by Montesquieu. Let me thank you, Billy, first for your role here tonight. Yeah. And the same, again, thank you very much, Adrian, for your contribution. And although we ended with the note to make the Netherlands more sporty, a bottle of wine, if you don't drink it in one time, is still, you know, affordable, I think. Gideon Simpson, thanks too, from the Center of Innovation for your role tonight.